This week on The Inside Flap.
It is really cringy writing about myself. It gets better the more you do it.
Okay,
and I
good.
Think it also works as a self-fulfilling prophecy, because if you write something really strident in your biography, I am this, you will gradually become it. This is what I'm hoping. But to be confident, be confident in your biography. Say what you are, who you are.
And they just start laughing again. And then they get up from the stage and they start circling the auditorium. Okay, what is going on here? And they keep looking back at me, and they're furtively, a great word for what they are doing. They're being very furtive in their giggling at me.
High as kites. The Inside Flap is available on demand and every week on iTunes, Spotify, and around the world on theinsideflap.com. What more can we do for you?
Podcasting live from Littleton, Colorado, this is the Inside Flap Podcast, Inside Chat edition for you this week. My name is Dave Medicus, and welcome to the show. Seated across the snack shack, to my right, that's Laura Medicus.
Howdy.
Howdy, and how do ya, as we swivel around in our circular chairs to try to keep an eye on the puppy. Was around here somewhere, running around the
He's behind
snack
you.
Shack.
He has a Where, little
oh, is he in the,
felt thing. He right no. He's behind you outside.
Oh, he's outside.
He has okay. a little felt thing that we use for the microphone to help with the
Oh, right. The popping.
Sounds. And someone out there just cringed, because I'm sure that annoyed them.
No, if they're listening in their like headphones. That. They did not like that. But it's funny I should mention that, because that's a little ASMR. And you're going to hear some ASMR talk with our guest this week, Janice Hallett, a friend of the show. We love having Janice on the show. A British journalist, screenwriter, and author of mystery novels, including The Twyford Code. Mm. Her new novel is out right now, and it is really good. I loved this book so much. It is called The Examiner. It's about the arts, which is a subject, you know what, it's kind of near and dear to my heart.
And so, mine.
And yours as yeah. well. Look at that. We're both working in the arts. And we'll have that
the funny
conversation
thing is,
for you in just a sec. Yes.
So I'm an interior designer, if you're new to the show.
Whoa.
And so clients will always want to know what you do. And I'm like, he's a theater teacher. Mm. And then their eyes get big and they're like, wow, you're both creative. And for whatever reason, I don't think of myself or yourself that way. I don't really think of us that way.
Really?
No. And so, but it's nice to be called that, is what I would say.
It is.
I don't know why I don't think that way. Huh. I should.
I don't know why you don't think that way.
I should, but I don't. I don't. Yeah. And I'm always like, I guess I am.
Well, you'll get some great creative talk from Janice in just a second. But I did want to talk a little bit. A little story for you from my job, my creative job. So just to give a little sneak peek.
I feel like
peek.
Your job is just hardworking.
It's hard. It's a lot of work.
It's a lot of work.
But it can be a lot of fun, and it's always unpredictable.
Yeah.
This is an example of how unpredictable it can be.
Okay.
So I was at work the other day, as I am wont to do, be at work. And we had a little band rehearsal, because I'm in the band for Sweeney Todd, playing the trombone. Mm-hmm. Love it. Absolutely love it. I told the kids it is the highlight of my day when we have band rehearsal. But oftentimes we have meetings going on or something else going on where I can't join the kids. And we have a very small band for Sweeney Todd. Like, I think it's only 8 kids.
Good, because the last musical, there were more band members than cast members, and they overpowered the cast members.
It was rough. It was real.
Wow.
And we're already talking about where to put the band, and knowledge is our musical director. And he said, well, we can just put the band right up front. I can stand here and conduct. And Deb put the kibosh on
that. You cannot.
She told me.
Band needs to be in another room.
In privacy. She's like, we're not making, the band is not front and center anymore. It's no longer about the band.
They can't
this is
be.
A musical.
It's loud.
I'm like, yeah, I know. And of course, it was Keith Oxman's last year as musical director.
Well, I mean, you guys sounded great, but
there's two. We had probably 40 members in that band You're in Town, and we were facing the audience, and we were loud.
It's interesting because Sylvia's high school had a pit. I'm surprised you guys don't have a pit.
Well, it's the school. So, I mean, the school is, the building itself is over 100 years old.
I know, but pits have been around forever.
Yeah, and there's that area in front of the stage there. But
that's too. It's right next to the audience.
It's very awkward, yeah. And it just takes away from the audience. But anyway,
the band's going to be down the street. And the cast will be inside.
Well, we're putting them off to the side. It'll point is this. We had a band rehearsal during lunch, and it was great. And I went back to my room, and then I had to go right before class started. I go back into the auditorium to pick something up. I don't remember what it was. And man, I think I had to take a few measurements because we're building a set, and it's a huge set. And you know, it's great because when I first got hired at East, and Deb, the other theater teacher, told me, in the falls, we do these small, intimate shows in the black box, and it's not a lot of work.
I remember
and the
this.
The spring productions are our big productions where it's a lot of work. Yeah.
Nope.
Yeah.
No.
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 No. We're back on the stage. I'm building platforms, stadium seating. I'm rebuilding the scrim. We got to build a two-story revolving stage.
That makes me very nervous.
Okay. Anyway, we haven't even gotten to that yet. We're still working on the scrim and the stadium seating. So I go back in the auditorium for whatever reason, and there's two of the band kids, Leela and Charlotte.
Mm-hmm. Are they Leela making fun of you? Flute, imitating Dave Medicus?
And Charlotte plays violin. Great kids, fantastic kids. Well, here's the deal. I walk in. They're laying down. They're the only two kids in this massive auditorium. They're laying down center stage, and they look over. They see me. I start laughing. They start laughing at me. Okay, that's it. That's great react. I love to get a good laugh at it, but I hadn't done anything at this point, so I get a little nervous. And said, hey, girls, what's happening? He said, did you forget something? No, I did not realize I had forgotten anything, but as soon as they said, did you forget something? I'm thinking, all right, I have definitely forgotten something.
Clearly,
what is
I've
it?
Forgotten something.
So I'm like, I don't know. Did I? Did I forget my music? Did I leave my horn? I brought my trombone back. What did I forget? And they just start laughing again. And then they get up from the stage and they start circling the auditorium. Okay, what is going on here? And they keep looking back at me, and they're furtively, a great word for what they're doing. They're being very furtive in their giggling at me.
High as kites.
these are good kids. They're
that's
not
why, that's why I said that.
But you're right. It
the way you're describing
it. Itself to someone who's been on smoking the weed. But no, not these kids. So I start following them around. I'm like, what's going on? I said, nothing. And they're looking around. I see them looking up and down the rows, up at every single row in the auditorium. We got these old wooden seats, 100 years old. They're looking up and down every row. And now, and this is when I realize, okay. I've left my keys behind. I said, okay, girls. Did I leave my keys behind? And, you know, I'm no dummy. I wasn't born yesterday. I realize what has happened. I have my keys on a Baltimore Oriole lanyard.
Okay.
And it occurs to me that what they have done, the way they're laughing, the way they're walking around the auditorium.
How did you figure this out?
I don't know. Because I've just been around kids for long enough to know.
I could have figured that one out.
What they have done.
They've swung the lanyard.
You're right.
They tossed it out into the audience.
Chucked it into the audience. And in point of fact, yes, this is exactly what they have done when they called
it
on
them. Yeah,
you
do know teenagers.
And they're like, oh, yeah, Dave, but someone, you got to try. So.
Did they find it?
Yeah, they found it after like 5 minutes. Circuit had wound itself around a chair leg, and we had to like go up and down. And meanwhile, I had a class coming in to my classroom, so I'm
so
like
stressful.
Very anxious. Yeah, you never know, and you know you always want to be there for your class. At
yeah,
the beginning
you
of class,
think you're but, supposed to.
Well, yes.
Schmave Medicus
will tell you, you're legally obligated to be there. Yeah. So Schmave definitely is always in his classroom.
Dave Medicus is always
yeah. in his classroom.
Shmave would not be in the auditorium. Shmave
has been known to be in the auditorium looking for his keys. especially when one of the keys on that lanyard is the only key to his pickup truck. The only key.
That's right.
To his pickup truck.
That's stressful.
And he lives, Shmave lives 35 minutes away from the building. So what would happen if that key disappears? But anyway.
Nothing good.
We get the keys, and I said, oh.
Shmara would be upset.
Shmave, yeah. Shmara would not be happy, and Shmara would have to drive up to East, to Schmeest.
All right. We've pushed that too far.
Too far. But I was like, I said, oh, and we got to it. I said, how did you know this was my keys? And then I said, oh, because it's got the Baltimore Orioles lanyard, and you guys know I'm an Oriole fan. And then I'm like, no, Dave, not you're know so. That. This was so from really smart intuition on my part to incredibly dumb intuition.
That's they your look at sports me like, brain.
What? No, it's because there was a bunch of keys on this lanyard right by where you were sitting for a band, and nobody else would have like 10 keys. And they took away my, I think I talked about it on the show, they took away my master key. Mm-hmm. So now I've got a key for every door in the building except for the auditorium. Now, do you know how I get into the auditorium?
How?
I gotta if it's locked, I have to use my key card for the building to access the elevator.
Oh, you come in that way.
Elevator.
Down into the auditorium?
Up
from the basement?
No.
What?
From the first level, there's an elevator.
I didn't know.
It goes
know that.
All five levels of the building. It goes up to the stage a half level.
Oh.
So in between the first floor and the second floor,
that's fascinating.
On the rear side of the elevator, it opens up to the, you know, where the girls got stuck in their last
year. Oh, that's right.
Yeah. So that's how I have to enter the auditorium through an elevator. So I got to access.
At least you can enter it.
Yeah, but it takes me forever.
Yeah.
And I still am accessing my own classroom through a screwdriver.
Oh, that's right.
All right. So I don't know what's going on in, and it's been a month, and I've sent out multiple emails.
Books need to be written.
Multiple emails.
This should be like a Kingsley
Can
Amis.
I please. And then on Saturdays.
Type of book.
And oh, listen to this. I'll give a shout out to
Lucky
Petra.
Lucky Gem.
Petra won't be happy
Straight
about
man,
this.
Straight man, Richard Rousseau.
Petra. Mm-hmm. So we have rooms inside the auditorium, the light room, the sound room, and the props room. Now, because I no longer have a master key, I cannot get in those rooms. Sometimes Deb is out of the building, as she was last Friday. Hmm. The prop room...
Shmeb was out.
Shmeb was in the building. Shmeb was watching the freshmen or the underclassmen present about their sound effects for their sound folios. Hmm. And Petra came up and said, hey, Dave, I can't get into the prop tower. I said, well, I don't have a key anymore. She said, yeah, but Amaria said Shmave was able to take a screwdriver and get into the prop tower. And I said, yes, and I was, or Shmave was, but it took Shmave a good solid 10 minutes, and I got to watch
Jimmy
these presentations because it was like a double thing. It was really tricky.
Oh, interesting.
So I don't have, Shmave doesn't have time to get into the prop tower right now. Mm-hmm. Don't worry about it. Find a custodian. So I watch these presentations. Go into the auditorium at the end of the day. The door handle is gone. It's been, and you can, if you look at it, it's been hacked off with some kind of sharp, blunt instrument. And again, my intuition kicks in and I can see that someone, Petra, our senior Petra.
How did she do that? Hacksaw?
Hammer.
Hammer.
Whacked
so she
away
hammered the doorknob off.
Door handle to try to get in.
Oh, but now no one can get in.
Now no one can get in. And the door handle had to be replaced.
Oh.
And the end of the story is that Petra will be paying East High School for a new door handle.
She has to do that?
Yeah, as per Deb Boss.
Oh.
And as well she should.
Well, yeah, I guess she did hack away at it.
I told her to find a custodian, and I guess she did, and I guess they didn't have a key for it. but she
took matters into her own hands. She's desperate.
She showed a little initiative.
She did show some initiative.
I respect the initiative.
I respect that.
But don't hammer away at the handle.
It's really funny. I wonder how loud it was.
Oh, you know.
I wonder if she attracted any attention.
Her solution also was to take a big piece of paper of like, what's the paper that comes on those rolls for like bulletin board paper?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, so she
ripped
off.
Craft paper?
Yeah, big piece of that, taped it over the half the door and said, do not enter.
Oh.
That was her solution.
That's funny.
All right, well, let's get on with it. We got a great guest for you. Once again, Janice Hallett joins the show. She's got a great new book out. It is called The Examiner. So this is a book that is told through emails, text messages, and essays, many of which appear in diary entry form. I love her writing style. She's always got that unique style, and it comes to fruition, or it plays well here. This is a format that works great for this book, as this is a story of six students taking a master's level art class. However, each of the students are in varying degrees of experience. Some have a great deal of art experience. Some are complete novices. And overseeing it all is Jella Nathaniel, who created this kind of mixed media course. She is under a lot of pressure to have this brand new class be successful. But at the end of the year, when the examiner, title alert, the examiner arrives to grade the students and their culminating project, a massive problem arises. As it turns out, one of the students had been murdered. This is a fun mystery told in a very creative manner. Really enjoyed this one. So here now, talking about her book, The Examiner, this is Janice Hallett. Lovely. Well, listen, thank you so much for joining me. How much fun was your book, The Examiner? I absolutely love this book. I didn't know. Look, there were many different ways I thought the book was going to go, but then all of a sudden it took a left-hand turn, and then it took a right, and then it did a U-turn, and then it spiraled. Oh, my goodness, this was bonkers.
It's a corkscrew.
It is a corkscrew.
rather than a twisty book.
And it was dark. It was delicious. I had a smile on my face throughout most of the book. It is a tale of paddleboards, woodworm, and a dead pig. Janice, what was it that inspired you to write this book? I say that, but we can't give away too much. So we don't want to give away too much. But, a hint at a little bit of what it was that that propelled this book into publication.
Exactly. And you must bear in mind, this is one of the first, if not the first, times I've spoken about The Examiner.
Oh.
So I've had to learn how to talk about it, obviously,
yeah,
in a wonderful, upbeat way, without giving any spoilers.
Right.
So forgive me if I scream in the middle of it. You know, that's because I've given something away.
Well, the good news is this is we're not live, so we can always edit.
Wonderful.
Whatever you say out. Yeah.
Oh, that's wonderful. So yeah, you won't hear the scream, but you know, be assured that I did.
Right.
It was edited out. So, well, The Examiner, first of all, say a little bit what it's about. The Examiner is it's a fun-packed thrill ride through the college course from hell.
yes,
in
it,
we follow the progress of six students on a new style art course, and that's one that brings art education in line with the demands of commerce and the workplace. And at the request of the external examiner, we read these six students' coursework, their final essays, and the communications they indulged in over the year on their internal message board, all of which the examiner has read. And he believes he's seen something between the lines. And he thinks one of the students was murdered and all the others are covering it up. Now, we've got to read everything and say whether we think he's correct or not.
Oh, there we go. Lovely. Absolutely. Yes. And it was such a delicious journey to get there. I felt like I was back in college myself going through this with all the different graduate students.
Have you had experience? You know, I know you have had experience in taking these kinds of courses.
Absolutely. I mean, that's really what inspired this is my own master's course that I took somewhat later in life. I was in my late 30s, and it changed my life for the better. I mean, it put me on the road that has ended right here in this podcast, me being a novelist, because I did my MA in screenwriting for TV and film. And if you ever heard one of my other interviews and podcasts, you'll know the journey that I took from that particular moment to becoming a novelist. But yeah, that course changed my life. And it's really stayed with me. The fact that we were a very small group of people, 10 of us, and we were together working very intensely for 2 years because it was a part-time MA, so that took 2 years. Mm. And it really did strike me that even though I was having the time of my life with people who were great friends and we were like-minded people, I thought, well, what would happen if someone arrived on a course like this with a really destructive agenda? And what if more than one person ended up on a course like this with a destructive agenda? So that's always been in my mind. And when I came to be writing my fourth full-length novel, that was what I wanted to explore, one of these courses that went horribly wrong, unlike the one I was on. So it's a tribute to the course that I did, but it's like showing you the worst course you could ever have. So believe me, it is a tribute, but it won't seem like it while you're reading.
No, absolutely not. And did you, so while you're in this course and you have these ideas, do you start taking notes immediately or is that something that you just kind of let simmer in your brain?
I let ideas percolate before I start taking notes, and they can percolate for years. Like this would have percolated about 10 years before I started thinking this is going to be an idea that I'm going to be taking on. So yeah, an idea is... it almost doesn't arrive fully formed ever. I don't think it ever has for me. They grow. They're a bit like a very slow snowball that grows slowly over time and doesn't need any snow either. but yeah, it gradually builds and it builds up the idea, then the setting, then the characters, and then a few scenes, a few words, and it gradually, you know when it's right to start writing or to start making notes. And that's a moment, I think, that comes with every idea.
Well, as long as the snowball grows and starts rolling downhill, you don't want to you don't want to be Sisyphus pushing a snowball uphill. That would be
uphill. No, definitely not. I think I've had a few ideas like that, though, having said that.
No, yeah. And I guess it pretty quickly you find out they're not going to be seeds for a full-length novel.
Yeah, well, absolutely. But, no idea is wasted. I think I've had ideas that didn't really go anywhere on their own be incorporated into other ideas and becoming a subplot or becoming a tangent from that idea. So, yeah, that nothing is ever wasted, I think, if you're a writer. I think note down everything, remember every idea you've had, and it'll work somewhere. It'll fit somewhere in future.
Mm-hmm. That's good. Let's keep all, no, we don't want to waste anything. So in your book, the students, so this is not a writing course. It's an art course. They're working on that. They're working towards this big culminating art project at the end, a whole team of them working together. And, you speak so much about different mediums and different art in the book. Is that something you've had an experience with? Have you done any art yourself? Do you like going to museums? What's the story, Janice?
Do you know, art, actual fine art, is something that's fairly remote for me. I'm not a big art fan. And actually, there's a scene in the book where one of the young students takes her dad to an art gallery. And she talks about him being a bit like a dog, like taking a dog to a gallery. It will follow you. Right. It walk around the museum, but it's not enjoying what's around it. No. And that, I must admit, that was a little bit like me.
Wow.
Writing this book. Yep. I suppose I wasn't exposed to fine art or paintings or, the higher arts as a child. I'm a TV and pop music kind of girl. So I've had to learn or I've had to sort of deliberately try and see what people see in it. And that's what I did. I did a real deep dive into art and what people look for in art. artists themselves, how they create it, the kind of background a piece might have. It might be just a very simple appearing sculpture, but it would have a long backstory, as long as any novel that I've ever written. So that's what I did a deep dive into here. But there was some method to that, because I took my first degree in English language and my second degree in screenwriting, and they fall under the banner of a lot of subjects, certainly here in the UK, that are being questioned as to the validity of people studying them. All the art subjects, even humanities like history and geography, people are saying, what is the point of these subjects? Because they don't lead directly to a career. So that they're not what people in the workplace require from graduates, a huge knowledge of screenwriting or English literature going back to the Middle Ages. That's not what you can use in today's workplace. And there are calls for these courses to be scaled back, if not completely removed. And that debate, which rears its sort of regularly every year here, really inspired me, because I studied English literature and language, and true enough, it didn't qualify me for any particular job. But I learned so much along the way. I learned about history. I learned about different cultures. I learned about the global politics, everything you learn from reading books. And it gave me such a wide appreciation of the world and of different people that I can't see any reason for not studying that subject. It's such an essential subject to continue to and for people to study, you know, in the foreseeable future. So it's talk here about removing those sorts of subjects from the curriculum that has inspired this. And the examiner actually is what happens when you give a lot of creative people without giving too much away, theoretical problem to solve, a logical solve. Give creative people a logical problem and see what happens.
Yeah, and it's a big mess is what happens. As a creative type myself, when I go over here to the math department or the science department and try to talk to some of those teachers, we don't have the same worldview. And so oftentimes it can be a little...
Don't go over there. Leave the math teachers alone.
John, let me be honest with you. I don't. The art department, we do our own thing, and everybody else, they do their own thing. But it is funny how, as teachers, we do represent that. But that's just not... That is not, you are not alone in what is going on with the arts and or literature in England. Here, the first positions that get cut, we're lucky to have two theater teachers at this school. They always looked, well, what the arts, that's not important. They need math, they need science. We need the arts.
Better subject than drama to study to prepare you for life, because... What? Everybody has to do bits of public speaking. They have to present their ideas. It doesn't matter what job you do. You have to interface with people. And that's what drama and theatre teaches you. There's no better subject.
Thank you. Amen. I'm gonna get that clip. I'm going to play it for my students every time they walk in this room. I tell it to them. I tell it to the parents when we have back to school night. That's exactly what I say. Welcome to my theater class. This is the most important class your child will ever take.
I echo that totally. Yeah.
Thank you. Great. I get your stamp of approval. So listen, so you're getting ready to write this book about art. You don't have any appreciation for art, let's say. You're going to get ready to do your deep dive. How does that work for you? Do you start, do you talk to people? Do you walk around museums and say, hey, listen, come here. Let's chat. How does that work?
Like everyone these days, it starts on Google. But I also have to say that my two best friends, they're twins, they're twin sisters, and I've known them since I was 6 years old, and they're both art teachers, and one of them, her eldest daughter, is an art student. Oh. So I had this ready-made source of information for me. So I had them about what it's like, telling me what it's like to be a teacher and a student in an art college in the 21st century. But I also looked online. I read forums where people were discussing art, modern art, where they were discussing museums and portraiture and artists. I'm a big lurker in chat rooms online because you learn so much. People are talking. about their passion, about their work, about their key subjects, and they don't realize anyone is listening. They certainly don't realize I'm listening. And that's the best way, the best research you could possibly do. I mean, it's fine. You can talk face to face to people and say, I'm a novelist, I'm researching this. And that's great. You get a certain response. But when people don't realize they're being listened to, you get a different angle on it. So that was a big thing that I did. I also looked around at art in the workplace, how corporations now incorporate quite a lot of art, particularly in their foyers and in the walls and corridors, because they always want to create a particular look for their brand and create an ambience for their staff. And they want to present a certain face to their clients and their customers. So that was interesting for me to look at. And you only have to wander around the City of London to the new companies that are there and glance into their foyers to see what they're doing with the with sculpture, with visual art, with multimedia art on screens as you walk in. And it's about, you don't even have to go in. You can see from the pavement what they're doing. That's your first glimpse of that company, and that's all created, of course, by artists, by graphic artists, and by people who've done courses like the one in the Examiner, hopefully not quite such an ending as this one, but what I did. I felt I like to get my inspiration and to research in the real world as far as I possibly can.
Do you find now, so having done that and talked to people with a deep appreciation and love for art, can you say now, have you gone into a museum and not been that little dog just checking off the boxes and following the leader around?
I'd like to think I'm a lot better. I like to think it. I think I'm a very well engaged dog that does actually look at the photos. So yeah, I can see now a lot of what people see, and particularly light, the use of light. I think it's not something that I really picked up on in paintings from, you know, many, many centuries ago. And now I can see what the artist was doing with that light shining on that particular figure in an otherwise quite dark painting. You know, that's quite a revelation. It's not something that I picked up on naturally. And I think maybe also because I'm very attuned to words. I'm very attuned to the words people use, to the words I read, to the words I hear, and less so to visual things. But that was a very visual exercise. Now, hopefully it has improved my appreciation of creative things.
Well, that's all we can ask. Now, but speaking of words, in the book, all the students, for their assignment, they have to write pretty much like a concept of who they are, kind of like an artist statement for themselves. I'm sure you, as an artist, as a writer, an artist, had to do that for yourself. Do you enjoy doing that kind of thing? Do you like to reflect on your works? How does that work for you?
It's an interesting exercise to do. At first, and I've been being a creative writer now for a good 15 years, if not longer, at first it really made me cringe, and it was the most difficult thing to write about yourself. It just makes you makes your toes curl to be saying what you are, to be boasting about yourself.
Yeah.
But now I'm a lot. I find it a lot easier, and I will change and tweak my biography over the years, because I am slightly changing as a writer. With each book changes you slightly. Mm-hmm. And I think that needs a bit of a tweak in your biography. It is uncomfortable. If there's any artists or writers listening to this and thinking, it is really cringy writing about myself, it gets better the more you do it.
Okay,
and I
good.
Think it also works as a self-fulfilling prophecy, because if you write something really strident in your biography, I am this, you will gradually become it. This is what I'm hoping. But be confident in your biography, say what you are, who you are, and then be it. You know, it's say what you are, and it's kind of easier because it's there in black and white. Yeah, it's written down. It's your biography. That is who you are. So yeah, be strident.
Okay. I like that. Be strident. So as a teacher, I did enjoy reading the parts where the students, they get graded on their work, and you know, the grades are explained to them, and then we get their reactions to the grades. One student in particular, never, you know, you always get that high achiever who always wants to get that mark of a distinguished. I believe you call it, what did you call it? Distinguished.
A distinction. Distinction. In a master's, in a master's, we have distinction is the highest grade. Then there's merit, and then there's a pass.
Okay. And well, they were always going for a high. So it was always enjoying to read those reactions. Have you ever had to do that? Did you ever work as a teacher?
I've never worked as a teacher. No, so I've never had to grade anybody. Okay. And I have to say that it's people who have worked in education, they read the examiner and they see quite a lot in the grades. I think if you don't, then you gloss over them. But there is some sort of clue there. Over time.
Yeah,
and some people become incensed when they read the grades because some they don't match up to how the student has been behaving without giving too much away.
Yeah.
But the grading is interesting. And isn't it strange when we've done some work and somebody else has arbitrarily given it a mark, out of 10 or out of 5. And yet art is very difficult to grade because it's so subjective.
Exactly.
So it is an awkward thing in artistic subjects to ascertain who is doing well and who isn't. So I don't really envy people, teachers of creative subjects, when it comes to marking work, particularly when a lot of work has gone into something. The amount of work that's gone into it, or do you mark whether you like the piece or not? Very difficult.
And for me, that's what I go off of, how much effort has gone into this. I'm not going to, we get hammered all the time from the district. They want us to show they want data, they want numbers, they want to see student growth. This is the arts. You can't necessarily, it's not something that can be quantified. And so we go back and forth all the time. And it's just every year it gets a little more. Where are your numbers? Where are the numbers? It's art. You can't put a number on it.
You can't, can you? You absolutely can't. No.
It's very frustrating. But, what are you going to do? Were you that kind of student who always strove for the high grades?
And wanted to I have to say, I've based, Jem is the student, the young Gen Z student who very, very ambitious. And I've based her drive and her keenness to do well on myself. Oh. And I'd like to say myself back in the day, it's myself now as well. I've always been really, really ambitious and really driven. Person and driven to achieve whatever I'm on a road to achieving. It's been various things over the years, not just exams and not just particular promotions at work or particular levels of achievement. All sorts of things. I've been very, very determined to do it, and that ambition is something I channeled into Gem, into that character. I'm a Capricorn. And we are very ambitious people. We are goats, and we're goats that are always going up a mountain.
Well, you'd be right at home here in Colorado. We got plenty of we have literal mountain goats. So I climb a mountain, and you can see they're just majestic, beautiful to behold. Just the way they can scamper up a cliff, practically, and just do it with such grace and ease. So that's exactly what you've done with this novel, and done it in your usual way. I love how you the book is written with the snippets of memos and people conversing with each other. And you can really see your background in screenwriting. Is that fun for you to write in that style?
Oh, it's huge fun. I mean, this one, if you've read any of my novels before, you'll be familiar with the format. But this one also has essays and coursework, as well as Gela, the tutor, her notes where she keeps a record of each assignment that they do. So you get some interesting asides onto the course with this one, as well as the communications. And it's based also on my master's. We had an intranet, I suppose they called it at the time, a message board where we communicated with each other and the tutor. And particularly the minute the course ended, that was all deleted. So it wasn't something that was ongoing. It was purely for the course, so that all the communications on that course was kept in one place. And if there's any disputes of anything, it was there for them to look at. So it's based on that. It's very, it's this transient world. Being a student is a transient thing. It's only lasts between 1 and 3 years mostly. And you can be who you want to be. You arrive there in a group of strangers. You have to communicate with them. You have to bond with them really quickly. And if it's a collaborative degree, which this one is, you have to work with them and you have to rely on them and rely on them taking up the work and running with the ideas. It's a very interesting, odd sort of false in a way, false situation to be in. And it's how people behave when they're in that sort of situation, reflected through how they communicate with each other is what fascinated me.
Yeah, it really is fascinating. And you, as an, I know most people think authors, it is, and it is very much a solitary existence. You do work creative, but it is a team. I mean, putting out a novel is a team driven effort, isn't it?
Oh, you're absolutely right. I mean, it's a strange, a double-edged sword, this, because most of the time I'll write a novel completely on my own, totally on my own, day after day after day after day. But then as soon as I submit it, it goes through so many other hands in my editor. And then when we've worked on it together with, you know, the two of us, it will go to many other hands, from the publicity people, the sales people, the physical publication people who deal with the production of the book. It goes through so many hands. So there's no way I'd be able to come up with an actual book. I could probably just send you a Word document. You know, that's all I could do. But yeah, it is a hugely collaborative and yet solitary. So very, very weird. And of course, half my job is writing on my own, and the other half is going out to events or doing things online like this, where I'm talking and communicating with people. Yeah. So it's like two extremes, really. Public speaking, you know, the great human fear on one hand, and and being completely solitary, totally on your own, responsible for a huge deadline, another human fear on the other. So it's an odd job, but goodness, I love it.
You seem to be handling it just fine.
So far, so good.
How is that for you, though? Once you've written your book, you've done all this work by yourself, and then you send it off. Are you on pins and needles, waiting to, do you get anxiety? How does that, how do you feel about it once you hand it off?
On the one hand, it's that moment between me handing the first draft over to my editor and getting her feedback, you know, in return. That can be several weeks, if not a couple of months, depending on how busy she is. For the first part of it, normally I feel quite good because I know it's not coming back in any time soon. Like, she's not going to come like within a couple of weeks. So I'm quite happy, first of all. And then gradually, the longer it goes on, the more I think, wow, it's taking a while. Does that mean she doesn't like it? She really likes it? Does that mean, what does it mean? It can be a source of anxiety. But at the same time, until you get that first draft back, the structural edit, as we called it, the first set of notes, you can relax a bit. And in my case, write something else. But otherwise, you can relax because you've done the hardest thing. The hardest thing is that first draft, I think. Getting the first draft, but starting, completing, and finishing that first draft is the main skill that you'll need as a novelist.
So you don't mind the rewriting then and the editing. So the hardest part for you is just getting it out there, that first draft.
Yeah, I don't mind the structural edit. You know that at the end of it, it's going to be a whole lot better. And they do vary. I mean, the structural edit I had for the Twyford Code took me ages. I mean, it's about 3 months. It was so big.
Wow.
For the Alperton and the Examiner, they haven't been quite so big. Hopefully, I'm getting slightly better. But at the moment,
that's what it sounds like. Yes.
Hopefully. But I don't know, because I'm in that stage at the moment, because Miranda and actually Caitlin as well, both my US and UK editors, have my next novel right now.
You're in right it at this right moment. Now.
And I don't know what they think of it.
Oh,
yep.
No. So well, at least you've got stuff like this to keep you busy and keep you distracted.
Oh, this is keeping me busy. Right? Don't worry about that. Yeah.
I'm sorry. I'll stop asking questions about it then. Now, listen, I did not know this. I learned something in this book, Janice. I did not know. Is this true? I don't know why I'm asking if it's true, because I looked it up. But Thomas Edison tried to connect with the dead?
That's insane.
I had no idea.
Yeah.
Huh. That's fascinating.
Well, I suppose back then, when electricity was thought to be supernatural, it was kind of a sort of logical step.
I guess so,
he was an engineer. He was a logical person.
Yeah.
Logical to see, you know, if our being is electrical, which it kind of is, could that go somewhere and could it be connected with once we've passed on? Mm-hmm. It's very interesting. It is a logical thought. But of course, you know, he didn't succeed as far as we know.
As far as we know, yes.
As far as we know.
And ASMR factors in the book. Listen, I never understood this my daughter, you know, she's of a certain generation, and her friends, and they get really, and my students as well, they get really into this ASMR and watching the videos and the stuff. I just find it really weird and kind of creepy. I don't like it at all. You didn't have, for research in this book, you didn't have to watch a lot of annoying ASMR videos or listen to them.
I watched loads.
No!
I went to an entire exhibition about ASMR here in London. It's a traveling exhibition, and I think it comes from Scandinavia. It's fascinating how ASMR recordings are made, and it's showing various, it's sound art, really, sound art, the outer sound, and very precise recordings that generate emotion in us. You saying you really don't like it, you find it really creepy. That's fabulous, because that shows that it works.
Oh, that's a good point. Yeah, it did that. What do we want with our art? To elicit some kind of reaction, right? Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah. And you get a lot of it on YouTube, a lot of, probably TikTok. It's not a platform that I frequent very often because I'm not young enough.
Waste of time.
But yeah, it's fascinating. ASMR, very, very interesting.
Yeah, I remember one time my daughter, she's like, her and her friend, they wanted to use the podcasting equipment for something. I'm like, sure, go ahead. And we had it in the little garage in the backyard. And I go out there, they got my microphone. They had the cover up, and they're taking like pins and sticking on the microphone. I'm like, what are you doing? Like, this is ASMR. I'm like, no, stop putting pins inside of the microphone. It's a sensitive piece of equipment, for goodness sakes.
That is sound art.
Okay, sound art.
Jem would definitely approve of that.
She would, yes. Jem would definitely approve of that. You've been watching anything good? Binging anything? Any recs? Watching anything? What do you got?
Goodness, at the moment, do you know, I haven't been. I was watching the Olympics.
Oh, how much fun was that? Yeah.
Oh, it's huge fun. I mean, over the summer, I must say, I don't watch a lot of TV because I try to get out and enjoy the weather when we have it, when we have the nice weather. So I'll probably restart my TV viewing in the autumn.
Well, yeah, and that's usually when all the good shows come out and the premieres, because that's good. What was did you have a favorite event in the Olympics? I like the track and field myself.
Yeah, I'm a fan of that. I like watching the marathon and meaty track and field events that you can get your teeth into, not ones that are over in 2 seconds.
Right.
I like the longer runs where they're going 20 times around the track.
The women's marathon was amazing. I don't know if you saw that one. And as a marathon runner myself, but oh my goodness, that finish. I can't imagine. I can't remember her name now, but the woman, she's a Dutch runner who won the marathon, and she took bronze in the 5K and the 10K. I can't imagine running a 5K, running a 10K, and then running a marathon within 2 weeks. Unbelievable.
Yeah. How do they do it? And then they run a marathon. This gets me. They run a marathon, 26.2 miles. And at the end of it, they put on a sprint. They've run all that way, and then they run a bit faster for the last half a mile. Amazing. Just incredible.
Well, speaking of incredible, Janice, I found your book, The Examiner, to be incredible. What a thrill ride it was. Just delightful. And as ever, great chatting with you. And I appreciate you taking some time out of your day.
Oh, thank you, Dave. It's been a pleasure to be here again. So thank you very much.
You got it. Have a wonderful day, and get out there and enjoy some time outside.
Okay. I will do while the sun's still out.
All right. Oh, yeah, that's right. Okay. Get out there and enjoy it. All right. See you, Janice.
And good luck. Good luck for your day.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Bye now. Bye.
The Inside Club. All right. There you go. That was Janice Howell talking about the book, The Examiner. Check it out. A lot of fun. Thank you guys so much for listening. Really appreciate you taking some time out of your day to give us a listen. And while you're out there, why don't you tell a friend.
5-star review.
We're telling them
only
friends.
Only, please.
Yeah, only 5-star reviews. Spotify. Wherever you listen to us, that would be appreciated. My name is Dave Medicus. See ya.
Adios. We've pushed that too far.